From west to east and kingdom to kingdom, you're listening to the Diz Unplugged Connecting with Walt podcast. Connecting with Walt is brought to you by Dreams Unlimited Travel, experts at helping you plan the perfect Disney vacation. Visit them on the web at dreamsunlimitedtravel.com. Hello and welcome to episode 57 of Connecting with Walt. I am your host and Diz historian, Michael Bowling, and I am joined by my co-host, producer, and good friend, Craig Williams. Craig, how are you today?
I'm great. How are you, Michael?
Oh, I'm doing well. Thank you. Just basking in our 85 degree weather.
Oh, wonderful. So we've been in monsoon season here in Orlando, which is honestly, I feel terrible for anyone vacationing down here right now because it has not been pleasant. But at the same time, it's just been wonderful. For the first time in, I want to say, a year and a half, we're getting regular rain. So the grass is all coming back. Landscaping that just got done for the spring is coming in just better than ever. I know people really never want to come down and experience rain on their vacation, but it's, you know what, these places need it now and then.
Yeah, I think I was watching you on Daily Fix this past week. Were you in Animal Kingdom and you were trapped inside by the rain?
We were. It was pretty terrible. We showed up and it wasn't supposed to have any chance of raining until like 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And so we were there around 11, to make sure that it gets out sometime around in that 12 to 1 o'clock hour. And of course, as soon as we met up, out of nowhere, the clouds just opened up and then it's like, oh, well, it's going to be nice. And then they came right back together and it got black and just gross. And yeah, before we could even get started, it started downpouring and just kept going and going and going. And yeah, it was not good. So we've kind of decided we're at the point where our in the park daily fixes are going to have to take a brief hiatus until the weather is back to cooperating with us.
Yeah. My daughter and I, we were once caught in the monsoon at Animal Kingdom, and I had never seen rain like that in my life before. Yeah. I was astonished. This was a few years ago. I've now seen it since because I seem to go to Orlando more often than I go to Disneyland these last couple of years, for obvious reasons. And I was astonished, just astonished. Yeah. I mean, there were rivers running down the pathways.
Yeah, it's very depressing at points. It's like, just because of the onslaught that can happen. And when it's like this, where it's daily, and not just for that quick Florida afternoon rain that everyone knows about, but that just hours and hours and hours. It's been bad, but things will turn around eventually. So, and if not, it's just pray for all of us for this hurricane season, because it could be another bad one.
That's what we've been hearing out here. So, but speaking of travel, going to the theme parks, all that, we're getting into that time of year. You know, people have planned their trips, or they are thinking. I'm of course in the Western Kingdom, Disneyland. We don't plan ahead. We just say, hey, let's go to Disneyland this weekend.
Yeah,
but out. Of course, at the Magic Kingdom and at Walt Disney World, you have to plan a year in advance, 6 months in advance. Folks are, you know, by now, folks going into summer already have their dining reservations. They already have their fast passes. They already have all that done. And but one of the things that we enjoy doing on the shows and all that, or when we travel with family, is a lot of us like to reminisce. We reminisce about attractions that aren't there anymore, or we reminisce about favorite memories that we have with family members or friends when we were at the parks. Or we do a little, you know, armchair imagineering. How at Disneyland, how would we improve Tomorrowland? Which, believe me, the sky's the limit there because it's just so dreadful. But, you know, how would you fix things? How would you improve, let's say, Disney Hollywood Studios? Or what kind of a restaurant would you like to see go in at World Showcase? I mean, whatever it may be, or a different land. And that actually, in all these different conversations, that got Craig to thinking about what I think was a really good topic for today's episode. And actually, this could be a topic for many episodes. We'll just sort of move from park to park.
Yeah.
But Craig, why don't you introduce today's episode?
Yeah, so we are calling this episode Disneyland of Your Dreams, in this case, Disneyland of Our Dreams. And it really is just a concept that's as simple as the title itself, where we're going to sit back and we're going to create the Disneyland that we think would be perfect to us, but pretty much nearly perfect, because, of course, you never should have too much of a good thing. You could have too much of a good thing, but you shouldn't have too much of a good thing. So we have to have some ground rules with this. And so we're going to look at the 8 realms of Disneyland. I don't think I have to list them off right now. We will be going over them as the show goes on. And of course, these have changed drastically over the years in some of the locations. Others, like I don't have a ton of history on Toontown, but I'm guessing it's not changed as drastically as other areas throughout the park. But
just got rid of things; they've not added anything.
Exactly, but there have been changes. Attractions have gone, like you said. Dining's come and gone. Entertainment, and there's a lot of history there. Some of the things might be things we're most interested about in the past. Some might be the present. And that's where the fun of this is going to come in, because we're going to basically take each land, each one of those realms, and we're going to choose one attraction, we're going to choose one restaurant, and we're going to choose a gift shop that we would have comprising the land. And I know that's not enough. It's not enough to make up that land, but this is for mostly time's sake. Obviously, we could sit here and talk about everything we would want in there, and it would go on and on and on, but we don't have 16 hours to record this one, so we have to limit ourselves a little bit. But the choices that we make can be from any era, of course, past or present, the exact same way as I've said before, but we can't pick multiple things. We can blend them together in some circumstances, as you will see as we start going over. We haven't shared our full list, but I know Michael and I at least talked about one, because we wanted to make sure we were okay with the fake rules we set up for this little
and it
game
ended up
ourselves.
Being both our lists, so we were definitely okay.
Exactly. Yes, it had to be okay. There was no workaround on it, and you know what, the rules were also meant to be broken in certain circumstances, and you will hear along the way when that does happen. But this is something that we're obviously doing for you. This is something you can play at home, help, maybe enhance your research on Disney history besides the stuff we're just sharing with you. Maybe it'll motivate you to go out and start finding this history yourself and putting together your own perfect part as well, too. But it should be a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to this one. But are we ready to start building the Disneyland of our dreams?
It's funny. And the way I approached this at first was I looked at each realm and thought, what might I add to it? What might I take away? But I still sort of started with the bones of it.
Yeah.
And So there are some things I thought, okay, if I was going to redo this, maybe I looked at it as if I redid the land.
Yeah.
These were the, at least if I was completely going to start from scratch, like if I were doing Tomorrowland, and bulldozing it over, these are at least the elements I would keep or add. That was sort of how I approached it. So it isn't the complete realm, but this is like after I bulldozed the thing or after I started taking things out, this is what
you would start
would
with.
Have to be in there.
Yeah. Exactly. No, I think that's a perfect way. So, should we start on Main Street USA? That would make the most sense, right?
That's right. We just walked in right under the berm.
Okay. And
through the magic tunnel.
Yeah, and we did not discuss how we are going to do this, but I think maybe we'll start with back and forth. Just go along with it, and there's no better place to start with one attraction. So, and do you want to kick it off, or do you want me to?
Oh, is this like the Disney history quiz? Am I better off starting?
Yeah. Okay. There's no wrong answers in this one, though, so that's the fun part.
That's true. I'll kick it off. So we each are going to give an attraction, and we each are going to give...
Yes.
Is that how it works?
Okay. Yeah.
Excellent. I'll start it out because I have a feeling this is probably some element of this is on both of our lists. I'm taking the Walt Disney... What I would add to the Main Street Opera House is the Walt Disney Story. It only ran there from 1973 to 1975. And what it was a biographical film about Walt Disney, because one of really the failings of Disneyland that we always say, this is Walt's park. And I mean, we're so proud of that, and that you feel his touch throughout that park, and you somehow sense Walt still his touch in that park, but we don't have anything that really tells his story there, unlike at Disney Hollywood Studio. So what had once been there, in the lobby of the Main Street Opera House, there were a large number of Walt Disney's artifacts and awards. There were props from his television shows and films also in there. But what Disneylanders really miss in this exhibit is the recreation of Walt's office at the studio. And we're not going to talk about, we're not holding the grudge too much. It went over to Disney Hollywood Studios on loan, and we never saw it again. There was also a video about the construction of Disneyland Run at High Speed. And there was even an audio animatronic Professor Owl talking about Walt Disney's True Life Adventure series, how much Walt loved animals and nature, things like that. Guests would then, now, so this is like a twofer now. So then guests would then enter the Opera House Theater to view a 28-minute film about the life of Walt Disney up to the construction of Walt Disney World. And then in the second sort of version of this, they then ran Great Moments with Mr. Lincoln.
Oh.
So yeah. That's what, when they first introduced this, it replaced Great Moments with Mr. Lincoln. People were not happy with that.
Yeah.
So what they did was they then ran Great Moments with Mr. Lincoln afterwards. I thought that was wonderful because we've talked before about Walt's admiration for President Lincoln. So I thought telling his story and having then the president's, you know, the president speak was perfect. And they've sort of done that on, you know, in Liberty Square, in the Hall of Presidents, but I would definitely add this in to my Main Street.
And see, that's a great one, and I wish I would have thought of it myself. But my one thing that I would have in my Main Street of my dreams is all of the Main Street transportation. And that is probably because of the resentment that I have as a Walt Disney World as a Walt Disney World visitor, at my regular park, and knowing that we just don't have the awesome transportation. They have vehicles, we just never get it out. Like, well, the once in a blue moon when our omnibus comes out, it's like I'm never around when I see people posting about it. It's not fair, and it's one of those things that while I understand the stress that the cast members go through having to clear the way up and down Main Street USA as they're coming through, whether it's on one of the horse and trolleys or if it's in one of the actual automobiles, but I am sure it's really terrible for them, but it just adds such a life and energy to the land that it does feel lacking without it. I mean, in Walt Disney World, we don't have that. We have a bunch of photo pass photographers stationed up and down Main Street, and that's our main attraction there, essentially. So
that must be why we don't have photo pass photographers. We have all those characters out in the hub and or in town square, and we have no photo pass.
If they set their tripods up in the middle of the street, they'd get run over.
That's true. You know what? I'm willing to have the vehicles.
Yeah. Yeah, but that's why I know a lot of people might not consider it an attraction. I do, and that's absolutely what I would keep in. It's one of those things I think too many people take it for granted.
I agree. Yeah, and it just adds so much. It adds such a nice storytelling aspect to it, and I always thought that would be one of my dream jobs. Is driving a Main Street vehicle because first of all, it means you are a character of Main Street. You're a resident of Main Street, and that's your role. And you're setting the stage because a lot of times you're driving people down Main Street, so you're the first character they meet.
Yeah.
So you're setting their day. I mean, how many jobs do you get to see a castle all day, and you get to honk your horn at people?
Yeah.
So that's a big plus.
And they always, even if they might be stressed, they always look like they're having fun. And that's special. But what would you choose for one restaurant?
You know what? I am going to bring a restaurant from another park.
Oh.
And I think that one of the things Disneyland needs, I think, are a few more really nice, elegant places to eat. Not that I've eaten here, but I have read a whole lot about this, and I know people who have eaten here. There would need to be a little name change to this, slightly. But I would add Walt's, an American restaurant from Disneyland Paris. This is a very, very elegant restaurant. It's designed as both a tribute to Walt Disney, but it has a Club 33 style, but it is for regular guests. But it's designed in that elegant Victorian decor
that
Club 33 had once been. The restaurant's lobby features many items referring to Walt's life and achievements. They had downstairs dining rooms that were named for Walt and Lillian and Roy, and those no longer exist, but they're now retail. But the upstairs dining rooms, and there's like six of them. They're all named after, they're themed to a different realm of Disneyland. You know, there's an Adventureland room and, you know, a Fantasyland room. There's a Disneyland hotel room. Mm-hmm. And everything in there is all themed to that realm. And it includes, including concept art by Imagineers like Mark Davis and Tony Baxter and things. And I heard the food is good. But also, I've seen photos of what this looks like, and it looks beautiful. It is a second floor restaurant, so it would mean, you know, either it would become a first floor restaurant, or we would have to redesign our Main Street a little.
Yeah.
But I would add this, Walt's.
Cool. Mine is a simple one, especially for people who know me. And, of course, the number one thing that I go on and on, probably to the point that I annoy people with, is the Little Red Wagon, the corn dog cart. It is literally just my favorite thing. If I had one day at Disneyland and I was only given the option to have one food item, it would be a corn dog from the Little Red Wagon. It's iconic to me. It's no other corn dog tastes like it anywhere. Believe you me, I've had my fair share of corn dogs from fairs to farm shows to other theme parks, and there's just nothing like it. It is Disney magic how they can take such a simple food, a hot dog on a stick with cornmeal batter. And deep fried, but it is perfect. And there's nothing like eating it right on Main Street too, or just going right into the hub and eating it there. It's just it is pure Disneyland for me. So there is no way I could leave it off of my list. But
I knew that's what you were going to choose. I think of you every time I walk by it or when I eat at it.
Yeah. Good. I'm glad. I think about it every time I'm having a bad day. It's like, you know what could have turned it around? A Disneyland corn dog. But what about for your gift shop? I think we're probably going to have the same one. Maybe.
Well, you know, I figured there was one obvious one, so I'm choosing one that is near and dear to my heart that I bet a lot of people do not remember, and that is the Mickey Mouse Club headquarters shop.
I definitely don't.
No. I think you would have to be an old Mouseketeer like me. This was after the Babes in Toyland exhibit left at the Main Street Opera House. But since I've already said what I want in the Main Street Opera House, this would have to be located elsewhere.
Okay.
On Main Street. This sold photos of the original Mouseketeers and Mickey Mouse Club souvenirs. Young guests could sign up as members of the club and receive membership cards. And, members of a proposed new Mickey Mouse Club show occasionally made appearances in this shop. And so, you know, that little location is just near and dear to me. And so I had to, I think I would include that.
That's
for personal reasons.
Yeah. No, that's a good choice. Obviously with me, I have to be boring and I have to be plain and go with the Emporium. Mm-hmm. It's just, and not for the merchandise that's sold there, just for the detail that is inside there. And if you haven't ever been in Disneyland's Emporium before, just walk in and look up and look all around. And that is what makes it special. It's alive. It's vibrant and moving. You just believe that you're in this old time department store when you're in there. And it's like you could genuinely spend an hour walking around. If you are into the details like you and I are, you could spend that much time walking around and taking it all in. And it's just, it is a special store. It's one of those situations where you walk in and be like, did they really need to put this much detail into a gift shop? And at the end of the day, I don't care why they did. All I'm glad is that they did. So, absolutely, the Emporium.
Yeah, and walk through the arcade shops, you know, towards the end. And there's even, if you look up, there's even hints to some of the shops that used to be there. There's little homages to them.
Oh, and like one of my favorite ones, and I think it's still technically a part of the Emporium, but the one women's section in there, that during Halloween they turned it into the Birds Room. Like, I love that.
The Murder of Crows.
Yeah.
In there. Is that the Fortuosity shop?
I believe so, yes.
I think so.
But yeah, just every. I mean, you can't really pick a bad shop on Main Street. And I did struggle between the Magic Store and an Emporium, but Emporium just had to win for me.
And a Main Street has to have an Emporium.
Agree.
There has to be in any Main Street.
Agree. So I'm guessing we may agree on the entertainment as well, too. But you surprised me on the gift shop, so I'm ready to be surprised again.
You know, I really struggled with this one because there is so much good entertainment. And I went back and forth on a number. And then I decided to go with traditional. What old-time, turn-of-the-century Main Street with its town square, what town did not have its own band? So I had to go with the Disneyland band.
Oh, okay.
So for that, just again, for the environment and just, you know, seeing them march up from the castle up Main Street and then, you know, then conducting in town square, you know, you just have to have that. Yeah.
I completely agree with you, but mine would be Dapper Dance.
That was my other choice.
It's I love the marching band. I love all the bands, but Dapper Dans are one of the only forms of a cappella that just doesn't annoy the bejesus out of me. And I just love listening to them. I listen to them all the time here at Walt Disney World too, at Magic Kingdom. So when we do ours here, that's most likely going to be my choice for that as well too. But it's just, it's one of those things, again, I don't want to keep repeating it, but it's just, it's Disneyland to me. Hearing the Dapper mm-hmm. Dans on Main Street, it's just so special. But that takes us all the way through Main Street. I mean, we'll be back later on in the day for a parade, as well as maybe at the end of the night for fireworks. Mm-hmm. But I think we need to start exploring the park. So I guess the question is, should we take a left and go through Adventureland, or should we take a right and get Tomorrowland out of the way?
Let's leave that horrible Tomorrowland to the end.
Okay, so let's move on to Adventureland, and let's start with the attraction.
Okay, of course, you know what? I prepared everything going the other way, but I'm five.
I gave you the choice.
Oh, I know you did, but I thought, let's go. I'm going to go to Adventureland. Okay, what do you want me to do first?
Pick your attraction.
Okay, I'm bringing something else over from another park, from Shanghai Disneyland's Adventure Isle, which is their Adventureland. I would bring the Camp Discovery Challenge Trails. The only thing is Disneyland lawyers would never allow this attraction. If built, though, I think this would be one of the most popular attractions in the park. This is a challenge course, not unlike anything you've seen in a Disney park. You're harnessed in. And
that's what I was going to ask, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, you're harnessed in. And you climb up and you're in this mountain kind of thing, and there are three courses known as the Hidden Falls Chamber, the House of Ancients, and Echo Cavern, and each are unique, and they take you through a different section of the mountain, and the harnesses travel along these tracks, and each of these courses have their own story, and each has their own complex challenges. And the cool thing is each challenge you come across within each course has three difficulty levels: easy, medium, and hard. And you can select the difficulty level as you go from challenge to challenge. So, you know, your harness is in this track. You can switch tracks. So you can do one part of the challenge. You can do the difficult one. But then you can switch over to a medium one or an easy one, if you want. So, for instance, there's one section of a challenge you can choose to cross. There's this high elevation, and you're above these jagged rocks, and there's a river and all this stuff. And you can just do it by crossing a standard bridge. That's really easy. Or the medium one you can choose to do is jump along scattered planks of wood. Hmm. That's the one I chose.
Yeah.
It's very Indiana Jones-ish, you know, and they all look broken and all this stuff. And some of them, you're taking a pretty long jump.
Yeah.
And then, or there's just these two ropes, these two skinny, skinny little ropes, and you just sort of shimmy across them. That's what most of my friends did on that one.
Yeah.
Or there's another one where you're in the cavern and there's this waterfall and it's all wet. The easy one is you just walk around it. Completely. And then there's one, I did the middle one, and then where the ledge was just a little wider. And then there's one where you barely had your toes on mm-hmm. the ledge as you went around it. And you're going around, and you're clinging to these walls that are damp, you know, from this big old waterfall
yeah.
that you're going under and all that. I mean, this thing is amazing. And I think it would just be very cool in Adventureland.
Hmm. That would be cool. So
it's the Redwood Challenge Trail, like on steroids.
Yeah.
Or for adults.
Yeah. No. That absolutely would. So for me, I know people have probably heard me rave, and you know, I always go on and on about how much I love Indiana Jones Adventure, but in my dream one, there is no dream in Disneyland that doesn't include Walt Disney's Enchanted Tiki Room. And we've talked many a times on this show about it, so I don't feel the need to go on and on. But the history that is involved in this attraction and just the intimacy in this attraction and sitting inside with your Dole Whip. So that's kind of the bonus. You have to get the Dole Whip. If you don't take it in, then it doesn't count. But just being so close and It's really hard to explain. It's just, if you haven't been in Disneyland before, I don't think you understand it. You can't lump Magic Kingdom's Tiki Room in the exact same category as the one in Disneyland. And it's a really fun experience. And I hit this every single time, and the last time I was there, you know, getting to do it with Mary Jo and seeing her eyes light up in it too. It's very rare that I'm in there with someone else who appreciates it just as much as me. Yeah. And that just, it made it even more special the last time I did it. So
what I love is our granddaughter, that is a not miss attraction for her.
That's special.
You know, she loves all of the, you know, she loves Splash Mountain and she loves, you know, Space Mountain and Matterhorn and all that. But we have to do the Walt Disney's Enchanted Tiki Room.
Yeah, it's just.
She loves that.
It's great. So yeah,
and Winnie the Pooh. We have to do Winnie the Pooh.
Funny enough, not to take us off rail, but I forgot to look back. I didn't even go on it. So I couldn't even go on it to look back at the end and see if I could see,
Melvin and the gang. Yeah.
Yeah. So it was
next time you're out.
I ran out of time, but, this next one is easy because I believe both, well, I don't believe because we talked about this one. It's the one I referenced before, but you and I both lumped our entertainment and our dining together.
I'm going to let you talk about that because in some of these lands, I had a backup when I suspected you were going to, we were going to choose the same thing. So I'm going to let you talk about that one and I might add a couple of things in. But I have, are we going to do restaurant or entertainment?
I'm blending mine together with this one.
Okay.
Because.
So should I do both of mine together?
If they fit together. Yeah, we'll just put them together. Since mine works all together.
Restaurants. And the funny thing is, I think I brought this up with Marcy when she was on the show, Eat Like Walt. Sun-kissed, I presume. I would bring that back. I would somehow blend it with the Bengal barbecue, which replaced it.
Okay.
But it served my favorite drink of all times in the park. It was a jungle julep. It was the most refreshing medley of probably frozen concentrate fruit juices, and the secret ingredient was Tang. Well, it was powdered orange drink, but the only powdered orange drink I know of is Tang, but so I don't know what they put in it, because there's recipes out there for it. I loved this drink. And I was so disappointed when it went away. You know, the male cast members wore Hawaiian shirts and Bermuda shorts. And the female cast members wore long floral dresses. They also made the mint juleps that were served on the Mark Twain. People might not know that the Mark Twain served beverages for a while.
No.
And they were run by, this was when the Sun-Kissed Citrus House was on Main Street. And so this was their little outpost in Adventureland. So when Sun-Kissed Citrus House closed, so did Sun-Kissed, I presume. So I would keep the food from Bengal Barbecue, but because it was better than what Sun-Kissed, I presume, served, which is like hot dogs. And I would have the juices that Sun-Kissed, I presume, served.
Okay. Then for your entertainment.
You know, Steel Drum Band. They used to have them up above on like the second floor of it would either be when of the Jungle Cruise or the buildings across from them on the balcony. They would have a steel drum band up there. And that just seems so exotic and tropical to me.
Yeah.
When I was a boy. I love steel drum music.
Yeah, that was the first thing that it even dawned on me when we finally decided that we were going to do this one, and that's what popped into my head. But of course, I decided to make mine easy and blend it into two, and I would choose the Tahitian Terrace, so that way I get the dinner, the food, as well as the entertainment all together. And I'm sure we've talked about Tahitian Terrace on the show before, probably when we talked about Adventureland. But for those of you out there who don't know what it is at all, it is in the space that, well, I believe the construction walls went up, but at Aladdin's Oasis, that strange section at Adventureland that never really quite made sense. Well, now the construction walls are up because they're bringing their new concept, the new dining concept that will be on the waterfront of Jungle Cruise, as well as butted right up against the Tiki Room. But yeah, the Tahitian Terrace was in this spot, and it was a dinner show that featured it featured music and Polynesian dancers, and you know, obviously I never got to see it, but I've just read about it all over the place, and it I'm sure you could correct me on it, but it seemed like just a luau show, but it was paired up with actually exotic food, as well as I wasn't it a planner's punch was like
there
the
was
one
there
signature
was a very
drink?
Popular punch there, and yeah, they had Polynesian themed food, you know, what we considered Polynesian themed in the 60s. We ate there many times. It was shrimp tempura. Even the children's menu even had like shrimp tempura and fried chicken with coconut sauce, but it had like skewered chicken, pork back ribs, seafood, a tropical fruit salad, and some traditional Hawaiian dishes.
Yeah. And see, and that's just that it's so cool. And, something like this, I understand why it wouldn't. I understand why it could work for as long as it did, and then they made the decision to take it out, but just inside a theme park to have this, especially in Adventureland, it's just right up my alley. I wish I could have experienced this. But
yeah,
alas,
it was
I didn't.
Wonderful. Yeah, I went to an event a couple years ago, Carol and I went, where they sort of recreated it as best they could.
Yeah, at Trader Sam's, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, right near there, across from there, and that, it has a name now, I don't know what they call it.
Yeah.
And that where the Dancing Waters used to be over to Disneyland Hotel on that lawn.
Yeah, area. Exactly.
And I don't know what they call it now, but yeah, and it was great. It was just because it was different, they told the whole history of it, but they had different generations of, you know, of the original family that, you know, performed there. They had like some of their children now did the performances.
Exactly. Yeah. No, that was right before, I believe the 2015 D23 convention. And I remember being very jealous because I missed the sign up for it went very quickly.
And it did.
I did not get in on it, but I still was able to get the mug that they made way too many of. So
yeah.
That's all that matters.
Yeah. And if you look online at the menus, was that 60 Polynesian kitsch kind of theme. They were beautiful. Absolutely beautiful.
Yeah. So. I need to find an actual picture of it. I've read the menu before, but I haven't seen the picture. So I will have to track that down, but let's move on into...
Oh, did we go? Did we talk about shops?
No, we didn't. Sorry. Okay. Thank you.
I would keep one that is there for me, the Adventureland Bazaar, because that was designed by Rolly Crump in like a weekend. It's a great story that he went out to the Boneyard and, you know, there's pieces of some of the ticket booths that had been taken down or in there, and parts of the old plantation chicken house. And he talks about how we used mirrors to make the space look larger than it is. But it's beautiful. And I'm so glad that with all the changes they've done to the shops the last couple of years, that they've pretty much kept this one intact.
Yeah.
And it's one of my favorite shops. I like to cruise through it. But it's mainly because I like to look at the decor. I mean, it's very lush with, you know, it has a tent-like feel inside, and it's a beautiful little shop. I mean,
yeah,
it really did an amazing job.
No, I agree. And I mean, unless I'm completely wrong about this, which I don't think I am, but Adventureland Bazaar is also what is home to it's home to Shrunken Ned, correct?
Yes.
And that's every trip I would go on out to California, I would always want to finally take in that. It's a kind of a fortune telling mm-hmm. machine that's in that store, and I never had actually cash or change on me to do it. And then this past trip, I had dollars in my pocket, and I'm like, I'm going to do it before the end of it. And I was with Teresa, and she finally got irritated and just gave me 50 cents and made me do it. So I finally got to, but yeah, I love it for that reason. It's one of those cool little aspects of it. Makes it a little bit better.
Yeah, I agree.
But, okay, now we can move on. Now that I'm not forgetting anything else. And let's move on into Frontierland from here.
Okay. Let me get my Frontierland stuff out. There it is. Alrighty.
And let's start with the attraction.
Okay. This, you know, this one was tough because I have so much. Because my problem for me is that there's not a lot of frontier left in this land. So I'd want to bring something back that would give the feel of vastness that it used to have. So I thought, well, but I don't want to bring back Mine Train Through Nature's Wonderland because we already have a train there. So I cheated. I would bring in something that was never built, but it came really close. It was conceived, and I think we did a whole episode on this. I would build Discovery Bay,
mm-hmm, yeah,
as an extension of this. So I don't know if this is in the spirit of
you cheated a little too much, but I'll give it to you.
Okay, I do though have an attraction then that I would bring in. And I would, if this is a little too much, because this is actually multiple attractions and restaurants and a whole different theme. But it is tied into the original backstory of Big Thunder Mountain Railroad. So listen to that episode.
Yeah. We'll put this as the asterisk. Instead of the galaxy's edge of your future, you would rather have Discovery Bay.
I would. I think it would fit into Disneyland a whole lot better. I would bring back the Mike Fink keelboats. I've talked about these so many times. They're based on the Walt Disney television shows. They were later made into feature-length movies. You know, Davy Crockett's Keelboat Race and Davy Crockett and River Pirates. These are free floating boats, which led to their demise. And they traveled around Tom Sawyer Island. Of course, it's named after Mike Fink, the king of the river, who actually lost the keelboat race. But the spiel of the keelboat captains, I thought, was funnier than the Jungle Cruise skippers. Hmm. And then they had this cute little rivalry always with the canoe, the canoe boat cast members, whatever you want to call them, explorers. And so I thought, I miss these. Plus, I miss the activity on the river because it gave it a little more, you know, kinetic going on the river. So that's what I'd bring back.
Well, my one thing, the only thing that I would want in there for an attraction is exactly what you mentioned, and that's Mine Train Through Nature's Wonderland, something that I've never done, but again, is just, it's one of those, I've seen the videos, I've watched it, the ones that have been, that have archived this attraction in pieces, and there is the most classic Disney elements to it. The reason why we all go to Disney, and I wish so much that I would have been able to experience it, from the animals that were all throughout there, the balancing rocks, obviously going through the rainbow caverns. There's such a lore to it that mm-hmm. I am fascinated with, and you know, like, so I was one of those people who was really tickled when they did that Mickey Mouse cartoon a while back where they went through Rainbow Caverns and all mm-hmm. that. That got me so much. So that's the Disneyland. That's the Frontierland of my dreams, including Rainbow Caverns.
Yeah. And would you include the pack mules and the Conestoga wagon and all that?
maybe, but I don't need those. I just want to ride the attraction. So if we'll throw those in, but it didn't need to be the whole experience. I'm fine with just the Mine Train.
That was my favorite attraction out there. I loved it. Just in Mark Davis's humor
yeah.
that he put into it. Now, some of the cacti from, I think, the Living Desert scene out there made it onto your Big Thunder Mountain Railroad. Hmm. So there's a little touch of it out there in the Magic Kingdom.
I'll have to pay attention a little bit more next time I'm on my Big Thunder then.
Yeah.
But what about restaurant now?
Restaurant. Okay, I'm combining my restaurant with entertainment.
I figured.
In this one. Yes. Golden Horseshoe. I would bring back either the Golden Horseshoe Review or Billy Hill and the Hillbillies. But I want to bring back the full Golden Horseshoe Review. Not the they did an abbreviated one a uh-huh. few years ago. I think it was for the 60th. I'm not sure. But I would want one of those two back in there. And I would bring back table service to the Golden Horseshoe. When I was a boy, maybe they didn't offer quite the extensive menu they have now, but the tables were all set up in rows. And so after you sat down, there was one cast member for every row. And they would hustle down, start at the far end, take every table's order, and then they would then start bringing all the orders so that you had everything by the time the show started on your table.
Yeah.
So now, of course, what they served then was simple. It was mainly just sandwiches, you know, ice cream, root beer, you know, that kind of thing. But I just thought that was so much nicer than waiting in lines.
You yeah. know,
up at the bar and all that. So that's what I would do.
That is something that I had a feeling you were going to say. So I'm also combining, I guess in a way I'm combining, but the Big Thunder Ranch Barbecue mm-hmm. for me. I only had the pleasure of dining there once, and let's be real, the barbecue was not fantastic. Let's not even pretend like it was great barbecue, but the atmosphere of that area I thought was pretty phenomenal. It felt like you were truly eating just in a different area. So in the entertainment, while it's not as good as sitting down and like having the barbecue you get at our Hoop-Dee-Doo Review here in Walt Disney World, and also a fantastic show, the fact that they did have the entertainment too, just it was a nice little touch to it. So it's one of those things I wish I got to experience more than the one time I did. But I loved the Big Thunder Barbecue.
Yeah, that's definitely missed.
Yeah,
that whole area. I actually had it as my backup. That whole Big Thunder Ranch area, because they had entertainment back there. They had the seasonal decorations. They had the barbecue. And I thought, for considering how much they produced and that was all you care to eat, it wasn't bad.
Yeah. Oh, you know? I agree.
And the thing is, it was, you know, they had the petting zoo. It was one of those quiet, out of the way spots in the bustling of Disneyland that you could go to, especially for little children who, maybe if they got overstimulated, they could go over there and color, or they could meet characters. You could have a bite to eat, and it was just nice to get them sort of, you know, understimulated. You could pet the goats and see Mickey Moo and see the turkeys that were pardoned by the president
for
Thanksgiving. So it was nice. And Disneyland's losing those places.
I agree.
Quickly.
Yeah.
And it's I'm sorry to see it go. And when you saw it at Christmas and Thanksgiving, Halloween,
yeah.
Well, autumn, how they decorated those up and
The cabin, the just filled with all the vintage Halloween decorations. Oh my gosh.
And that was cabin was constructed by real logs with real logs, and it was and they even though it was up to modern code, the Imagineers were very careful to design it so you wouldn't see that it was designed to modern code. Yeah. They made it look as authentic as possible to a real log cabin.
They did a good job.
Yeah.
No, that's I'm completely on board with you on that one. Mm-hmm. So we agree on that. Mm-hmm. But what about gift shop?
The gift shop in Frontierland. I liked the Pendleton shop, although I don't think I ever bought anything there. I just liked the fact that it was an opening day attraction and opening day store. There weren't a lot of places I bought things in Frontierland. Although I think I did buy a Davy Crockett rifle there when I was little, and then our son bought one when he was a boy. Otherwise, not much in Frontierland. I think it was the Pendleton shop was the one that I had on my list. It was purely nostalgia.
Yeah. I struggled with this one, too. I walk in the one, I'm guessing it's just called, like, the Trading Post or something along that lines that's right as soon as you walk into Frontierland. Mercantile, I think. But
yeah.
I never buy anything. It's just you kind of walk in and walk out. But I was, as I was researching for this, I read that it was called like the, back in the 50s and 60s, it was called like the Mineral Hall. And it was essentially like an exhibit, but also gift shop where it had minerals and you could get mineral samples and they were labeled as like Walt Disney's Mineral Land.
Yes.
And that's one of those things that makes Knott's Berry Farm special to me is, and I think I maybe told this story once, I'm not even positive though, but when my dad went to Knott's Berry Farm as a kid, he did like the gold panning for gold there. And so then when I finally went, I was able to do it too. And so I have his vial of gold and then mine as well from the two different eras. And so I've always liked little tchotchke things like that. And so this seems like this would have been right up my alley with the minerals. So I would, even though I have no idea what it looked like, anything, just reading about it sounds like
it'd
be perfect.
And it had a little black light area so you could see the gemstones that glowed.
Oh, that's cool.
You know, and all that. And they even, if I remember correctly, they even had a little like black light kit you could purchase. Because that was like one of those things that youngsters my age saved up for, because yeah. It was for its time, it was a little on the costly side, but then you could display your you know, those, because you could get those little glowy minerals and all that,
yeah,
and the geodes and all that really shone under the black lights, because in those days nobody had black lights in their homes.
Yeah, you know,
there weren't black light posters and all that, and so
how the times changed.
I know. Well, it wasn't the hippies hadn't moved in yet, and they you could get these little black lights that you could then display your stones.
That's wild.
Yeah. So that was a fun place. And it was those little things that made the park unique. And again, it gave it its it added to the storytelling and the theme and made it feel more like a wilderness.
Yeah. Well, I know the next one is going to be unique too, and of course we're moving into New Orleans Square. So, Michael, what would you choose for the Disneyland of your dream attraction for New Orleans Square?
Well, it would. There's two to choose from.
Yeah,
we haven't seen too many changes in this one. It would for me. It would have to be Pirates of the Caribbean, but I would. It would be the original. version.
Okay, good call.
Before the various little changes happened over the years and all that, because I got to see it in Tokyo Disneyland. They hadn't dinked around with theirs as much the way we have out here. And I, you know, that was the one that Walt worked on. That's the one that Walt, you know, that he saw at least the model, the working model, and he saw one scene completely done, which of course is no longer going to be there. And I just think that if any of them should be untouched, it should be the original one.
I agree with that. So, and based on our redhead scene here, you know, I know it came to Disneyland Paris first, and they got the first glimpse, obviously, in French, though. Listen, I'm not going to complain too much about it, because the whole new generation that grows up with it is going to learn to appreciate it, and they're not going to realize what they had before. The same way the generation who grew up on thinking that Jack Sparrow was always probably part of the ride felt that way. And, like, you know, I was in the generation where I probably did Pirates once or twice before the first PC change happened, especially with the men and the women and the chasing. And so it's been tumultuous years with it, but the new generation of kids coming and seeing it for the first time will probably learn to appreciate it. But I'm completely with you, though. I think the Disneyland one should have remained unchanged. And I, without stealing yours, you're absolutely right. There's only two choices, and over the years, you have convinced me that while Disneyland's Haunted Mansion is special, that Walt Disney World's is truly the better attraction. And so I think years of you telling me the reasons why, I think you finally convinced me on that. And now I'm actually, I'm in that mindset. So Pirates of the Caribbean is what would jump out to me initially, but to try to be a little bit different from you in this one, I will have to give myself a little bit of a pass, and I will say the Disneyland of my dream always has Haunted Mansion Holiday running, which of course is the holiday overlay to the Haunted Mansion that features Nightmare Before Christmas. It is one of the seasonal movies in right after Halloween. I'm a purist who thinks that movie should not be enjoyed until Halloween night, because that's when it starts in the movie. So that's when it should first be watched. But starting the night of Halloween night through Christmas, it is a movie that I can watch over and over again. Kylie and I both love it. And getting to take her to California, and she still hasn't seen the Haunted Mansion in California regularly. Oh, she's only been to Disneyland. She probably did when she went on a trip back in like 2000 or 1999, sometime around the same time that I did my first trip, before we knew each other, though. So I'm sure she saw it back then, but yeah, at least her and I together, we've never seen that version together. We've only seen Haunted Mansion Holiday. So it's one of our favorite things to do. We do it just over and over and over again. It's so detailed. The fact that they whip it all up together in a month, and that it's not even done by Imagineering, that it's a creation of Disneyland Entertainment. Like, that just always blows my mind. That it's such an awesome attraction. So I would go for that one. Halloween and Christmas is going to be year round.
There are a lot of people that would like to see that. I'm one of those people that wish, but economically it makes no sense, is that for Halloween we could have the original Haunted Mansion, and then right after Halloween do the switch over. Like, if they could do it overnight. But they can't, and now Halloween's starting in September at Disneyland. We're following in the footsteps of the Magic Kingdom, so...
I was actually just going to be really ridiculous and say, justify it by making it August, September, and October. Do that if you have to. But I actually enjoy that idea. That would definitely it would make it a little bit more unique. But you know, luckily with our job, a lot of times that I have to travel are during the holiday seasons. So I'm usually very lucky that I get to catch it a lot. So.
You have to go to Tokyo Disneyland and see how they do the overlay there. Because it's the Magic Kingdom style Haunted Mansion. And see how they do it on a Haunted Mansion of that size is impressive. And we talked about it when we talked about my trip to the parks, you know, to the Asian parks. Yeah. But way back, when was that, October?
That's been a while, and, yeah.
And it is magnificent.
Yeah.
What they did.
I will see that one day. Mm-hmm. One day. But what about for your restaurant here in New Orleans Square?
I love Café Orleans. I like the history. You know, when it started out as Café Creole, when it was just, you know, what wanted good, strong coffee. Mm-hmm. I like that it morphed into a restaurant, a more affordable Monte Cristo, and the pommes frites I love.
Oh, yeah.
And I think it has a good menu. I like that they kept, even as it morphed into it was redesigned into a restaurant with the patio, I think it did an excellent job. They kept a lot of the original interior design work, even when they moved the door, which needed to be moved, when they moved the entrance over to the other side near where the parasols are. And they kept the espresso machine, that beautiful espresso machine that probably most people just walk by, which is why I brought it up with Marcy.
Yeah, I used to walk by it until I can't remember which trip it was where we did a shoot in there. And I think you were the one who pointed it out to all of us. And so now I can't go in there without noticing it.
Yeah. So that actually is one of a couple of restaurants that I feel the trip's not complete if I don't eat there.
Yeah, it's just nearly impossible to get an actual dining reservation there.
I know.
From
it's tough. That's why almost, you know, almost not complete.
Yeah.
No, it's not like my trip is ruined.
I think the last time we were out there, the first or second day of the trip, I was like, you know what? I'm going to look to see if I can get a reservation there. Just a two top. So not asking for taking away a lot of room. And it was like, it was booked every single day. I had like one option, like Saturday at 4:30. Like I can't plan almost 5 days ahead. I don't know where I'm going to be at that time. I can't put this on the books. So
it's a destination restaurant. It's like planning for Carthay Circle. You got to look at it that way. You just,
Sure,
you're there.
I think Carthay is now a lot easier to get into than Cafe Orleans. That seemed to be the really tough one. But I think it's maybe small. It's small, depending on what time of year you're going, and especially if it's around a weekend and all the locals are coming out in droves going to it anyways.
And they will have seasonal dishes and desserts that.
Yeah.
That people are drawn to, they're drawn to that restaurant.
Which is always nice. And I'm going to put an asterisk on my restaurant. Mm-hmm. And that is, the Disneyland of my dreams would include a Club 33, but one that was open to everyone. So not just by knowing someone who is paid the massive amounts of money to have the membership in. And they, you know, obviously you and I have friends out there who are members, and we've been more than blessed by their generosity and taking us there and letting us experience it. And I appreciate that every single day. But yeah, since this is the dream segment of it, it's a Club 33 that I wish everyone could experience. Mm-hmm. And it's just, you know what? It's not about being able to drink inside Disneyland. It's just the views that you have up there, looking out into New Orleans Square and Frontierland and the rivers of America and the dining experience itself. I don't think it's necessarily the best food on Disneyland property, but it is just it's an experience that is unforgettable and amazing.
I do like the new jazz club. up there.
Yes.
You know,
yeah,
it's that off-centered window
from yeah.
the exterior that drives me mad.
That would not be in there.
I see it. I see it every time.
Yeah. And and also in this, the Court of Angels would still be open to everyone.
I was just going to say that. That is on my list. That was going to be my... Okay, I was going to talk about it. We're going to talk about design of this land. I have this... The Court of Angels, this quiet area of Disneyland, you know, with its grand curved staircase, it made it a perfect backdrop for photos. Both the Disney Gallery and the Court of Angels were areas that were open to guests that were closed and transformed to private guest areas. And one of the many charms of Disneyland was its quiet, out-of-the-way areas, like we're talking about Big Thunder Ranch. And there are almost no quiet areas left as the guest numbers increase. And Disney monetizes every area. Even Court of Angels, a lot of times, would be converted into a retail space during the peak seasons, which just broke my heart. You know, but it was so nice, and you could just wander over there, and there would be a jazz musician back there just playing, or Tiana would be there, you know, or it'd be a little meet and greet of Mickey and Minnie in their Mardi Gras outfits,
yeah,
or something, or it was just a quiet place to hang out, and it was just sad that we lost that.
It is, but at least you have it in my dreams. So,
yes,
one day when you come to my dream park that only includes eight attractions and eight restaurants and eight shops, but a couple and a little bit of entertainment here and there, you'll at least have the Court of Angels to enjoy. But what would you go for shopping? Because I know that there's been a lot of very interesting shops in this area throughout the years that have come and gone.
Well, for me, one of the shops I went to all the time, it also would mean that a certain vendor would have to start making these things again, but he had a falling out with Disney. There was Le Ornement Magique, which I think now is selling dresses.
Mm-hmm.
It was a small Christmas tree ornament shop, but it featured Disney ornaments by Radco. And Carol and I would always get Radco ornaments there every year. We have probably one of the most expensive Christmas trees in our town because it is filled with Radco ornaments.
Wow.
And there's a whole story behind what happened between Christopher Radco and the Disney company, and which is why Radco ornaments are not made anymore, and Disney ones are not made anymore. And I would bring the shop back, but it would have to have Radco ornaments in it.
Okay. With mine, this is another one that I've read about a lot that I never got to experience, but I believe it was called the One of a Kind Shop. And it's from everything I've ever read about. It was one of those things it was a shop that was just filled with antiques, but not really organized, just all over the place between, some jewelry, like vases and other.
Well, you could buy a chandelier
decor.
There. If you wanted to.
Yeah. a lot of carved wood, and just a crazy, it sounded like a clean Disney-fied version of a pawn shop that you just didn't pawn anything. You just went in and bought these random treasures that you find. And,
everything was authentic antiques. You could spend thousands of dollars in there.
And I love the idea of that. When I travel, I don't like to do a lot of shopping. I like to take in the experience of the places I'm in. But usually when I am traveling, if I wander into a shop that's not like a part of the attraction that I'm at, usually it's when it's like a random antique shop, because you just never know what you're going to find. It's like there's a one I went into in Canada at one point in time where I found an Elvis record that isn't rare, but the condition that it was in finding it was just, it was pretty rare. Would have cost me way, way, way more on eBay to pick it up than I was able to get at this store. So I've always been attracted to places like this. It you might not know the story in the background about the items that are in there. It might just be the window shop and look through, but you always find cool stuff. And that's, I've heard about in New Orleans Square. I heard Pete go on and on about the jewelry stores that were in there and fragrance stores. And, you know, mm-hmm. I know they have a Pandora shop in there, or whatever jewelry they're selling now, and they have fragrances and all that. But I think I want the New Orleans Square of the past, the more specialized stores.
Oh, the Lafitte Silver Shop. And
yeah.
I had that. My runner up was Mademoiselle Antoinette's Parfumerie, which is still there. But when I was a boy, you could mix customized fragrances, and then they had women who they were, I don't know what their titles would be, but they were skilled in mixing perfumes.
Yeah,
and they were trained in it. And then they saved it. They saved what your custom scent was. So you could go back to Disneyland even years later and have your custom scent remade.
Yeah. Oh, I remember you telling me about that before. Mm-hmm. It's so cool.
I remember my cousins and one of my aunts would do that. And then they did sell, you know, regular perfume, you know, name mm-hmm. brand perfume, as that shop does now. But also, they sold beautiful little perfume bottles that people would buy and get them as gifts or for display or whatever. And they were just really pretty cut glass and all that, very intricate crystal-looking perfume bottles.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, see, various colors.
We're missing out.
Yeah. Yeah. The shop didn't intrigue me when I was a little boy. I would stand there thinking, oh, dear Lord, when are they going to be done? But now I'm just so glad I experienced it, you know.
Yeah. No, I mean, isn't that how it always goes, though?
Yeah.
So. But, okay, so that takes us to entertainment in mm-hmm. New Orleans Square.
This is tough. All my favorite entertainment is in New Orleans Square.
So yeah.
This is hard. I finally decided Fantasmic, but it would be one of the earlier versions, even the previous version, but with the new updated technology. But no Captain Jack Sparrow. We'd have Peter Pan sailing
yeah.
the rivers of America. We'd have that version. We would have, you know, the full sort of Snow White transition of the Evil Queen and all of that, because now it doesn't quite make sense. But now with the transformation to Maleficent, and but we'd have the modern, you know, the current version of Maleficent's transformation and you know, that kind of thing. And the much crisper projections and stuff.
Yeah.
No, and then there's a couple other things. Like I'd want the big giant TikTok back. That's been gone for, you know, decades, and the mm-hmm. big Ursula and the Flotsam and Jetsam that were on the skidoos, you know, and all that. And so I want all those elements, you know, back in it.
I completely agree. That is the highlight entertainment above and beyond. But since we're not trying to overlap as much as possible, my backup on this one is I love the Pirate Band. Mm-hmm. I love listening to the jazz band inside the French Market.
Yeah, the Wall Street Bachelors. Yeah.
Yeah, but I love the Pirate Band. It's just the way that they just walk around and they interact with guests, mm-hmm. plus
They're
the
funny.
Music they perform to. Yeah, it's just it's so fun. Mm-hmm. It puts you in the spirit, and I'm hoping that they don't team them up with Red when she makes her debut.
Oh,
cause that's,
you know what? You know they're going to do that. What else are they going to do with her?
I'm very concerned. So
maybe they'll have her dancing like they have Cruella De Vil dances with the Firehouse 5+2 over, you know, in Town Square.
And I could be okay with that, but it's still, I we'll have to see how that is. But I think we can safely say if we were doing this in 3 months versus right now, Red would not be on our entertainment choice for either of us.
No, not at all.
Not at all. Well, see, I was not expecting our discussion to even be this lively, but at this point, I shouldn't be surprised by anything at all. So I think since we've already covered 4 of the different realms of Disneyland, that we should save the other 4 plus our nighttime spectacular for another episode. So I think I'm going to go ahead and make the executive decision on this one, and we are going to wrap this up. But this has been just a lot of fun, and I can't wait to see what the other half happens.
It does sound like fun. So, and it gives us a whole another week to just keep dreaming about our Disneyland.
Yeah, exactly. I love those daydreamings.
Yes.
Well, here we are again. This is my favorite part of the show, where we get to have fun with a little Disney history. It is time for the This Day in Disney History quiz. This time it is for the week of May 27th. We have our returning contestant, Ryan Teets. Ryan, welcome back.
Thanks for having me again, Michael.
So it is great. We're glad to have you back. I know last week was a bit rough.
Yeah.
But so we hope you had you had some time to recover. So I know now that you sort of, you know, the format and all of that, you're gonna I just feel it, that that pixie dust is on you and all that. So, one of the reasons I wanted to have you on the show is that so many of our listeners I know would love to be a part of the Diz. So I was a fan, before Pete asked me to become a part of the Diz. Pete and Tom Bell, who is the host of the old Disneyland show. And tell our listeners, how did you become a contributor to the Diz by contributing articles? And I know you've appeared on our Walt Disney World show as well.
Yeah. Well, I don't remember how long ago it was now. It's well over a year, probably 2 or 3 years ago now. Pete put out a call on the show for contributors for the WD Info site. And so I applied and got accepted, and the rest is history, I guess.
Okay, excellent. And did that lead to being a moderator on the rumors board for the Diz boards?
I think the moderator came first. And that was, Jackie at the time was in charge of finding new moderators, and she asked me if I would want to join the team, and I said, sure, why not?
Excellent. Well, that's great. So you must have been very active on the boards, I would think.
Oh, yeah.
And you must have been very positive on the boards, I would think, too. So
you can only be positive so much.
Oh, yes. I have found that to be true for some of our friends on the boards there. So, I just know you're going to do very well this week. So just to run through the rules for any of our new listeners, and as a reminder to our listeners playing at home, if you hear the question and you choose not to hear the multiple choice options and you get the answer correctly, you will receive 3 points. If you opt to hear the multiple choice answers and get the answer correctly, you will receive 2 points. If you ask to have one of the options removed and you get it correct, you will receive 1 point. However, if your opponent answers a question incorrectly and you answer it correctly, you will receive 1 point. All right. So, Ryan, since you are our guest, would you like to take the first question or pass it on to Craig?
I'm going to take the first question this week.
All right. Different strategy this week, huh?
Yep.
All right. Okay. So here we go. For May 27th, On May 27th, 1933, the Century of Progress Exposition opens in Chicago, Illinois. What is this exposition's Disney connection?
Yeah, I'm going to have to go with the multiple choice.
A, Walt's father, Elias, employed as a carpenter, helped to build some of the exposition pavilions. Or B, the Baldwin Locomotive Works displayed their newest narrow-gauge locomotive, a 460-10-wheeler. Years later, that same locomotive would become the Roger E. Brogy locomotive for the Walt Disney World Railroad. C, Walt Disney and animator Ward Kimball visited the exposition. Or D, the Mickey Mouse short, Mickey's Mechanical Man, debuted at the exposition.
Still doesn't help me much, but I'm thinking it's going to be, what was C again?
C is Walt Disney and animator Ward Kimball visited the exposition.
I'm going to go with D, the short premiere.
The Mickey Mouse short, Mickey's Mechanical Man, debuted at the exposition. Okay, yep. Final answer?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm sorry, that is incorrect. Although Walt did have shorts debut at other expositions around the country, not at this one. So, Craig, over to you. So, what is the Disney connection for the Century of Progress Exposition in Chicago on May 27th? It opened on May 27th, 1933. Did Walt's father, Elias, help build some of the pavilions? Was one of the engines displayed there? Did it become the Roger E. Brogy? Or did Walt Disney and animator Ward Kimball visit the exposition?
I want to say that I've heard you speak about it before, and that it was that Walt and Ward Kimball went, but that could have been something else differently. But I'm going to go with that one because it's the only one that sticks out to me like I've heard it before.
Okay, final answer?
Yeah.
Okay, you are correct. In August, Walt Disney and animator Ward Kimball will visit this exposition to see its acres of famous railroad engines. And of course, Walt's love of trains took off from there. So, and to where he was inspired, of course, to build Carolwood Pacific and a train around his theme park and you name it. So, okay. All right. So good job. 1 point there. Okay, Craig, to you. May 28th, this Disneyland attraction opened on May 28th, 1966.
Okay. Multiple choice.
Is it A, It's a Small World in Fantasyland? B, Mine Train Through Nature's Wonderland in Frontierland? C, Carousel of Progress in Tomorrowland? Or D, Great Moments with Mr. Lincoln on Main Street, USA? Huh. This is 1966.
Well, who would have saw this coming, that right after the World's Fair was over, they would put the attractions there? It's a crapshoot on this one. I know we've talked about it before, but I can't remember, so I'm going to go with It's a Small World.
Final answer.
Yeah.
And it's a happy one after all. That is correct. So it came direct from the World's Fair, and this interior boat ride was sponsored by Bank of America. It features 297 animated children, 256 toys, a canal filled with 233,000 gallons of water, and of course the famous song It's a Small World After All, written by Richard M. Sherman and Robert B. Sherman. It is the park's first continually loading high-capacity ride. The day is marked by special ceremonies hosted by Walt Disney, in which water from all over the world is poured into the attraction's moat. Disneyland will throw another grand opening celebration for the attraction 2 days later. It's a Small World will be so popular that versions will later be added at the Magic Kingdom in Walt Disney World, Tokyo Disneyland, Disneyland Paris, and Hong Kong Disneyland. So, Craig, good job. That brings you up to 3 points.
Thank you.
Okay. Okay, Ryan, back to you. All right. Here, we're really going back into early history here. From May 29th, at a gag meeting for a Mickey Mouse short on May 29th, 1928, what announcement did Walt Disney make to his animators?
Yeah, I'm going to have to go multiple choice.
Is it A, the contract for the Oswald the Lucky Rabbit series had come to an end? B, Walt and Roy plan to construct a new studio on Hyperion Avenue? C, Walt and Ink and Paint girl Lillian Bounds planned to marry? D, Walt intended to produce cartoons with sound? This is May 29th, 1928.
Yeah, 28. I'm thinking due to the year, I'm thinking D, shorts with sound.
Okay, final answer.
Yep.
That is correct. At a gag meeting for the second Mickey Mouse short at Walt Disney's house, Walt shares his idea of producing a sound cartoon. Excellent. 2 points. So here you go. You're giving Craig a run for his money now. It's 3-2 with Craig in the lead. Craig, back to you.
Okay.
Okay. Work begins on this Disney project on May 30th, 1967.
Okay, multiple choice.
A, construction on the interior of the show building of Disneyland's Haunted Mansion in New Orleans Square. B, filming of Walt Disney's The Love Bug. C, site preparation for the Walt Disney World project in Florida. Or D, the first meeting between Dick Nunes and Card Walker of the Walt Disney Company with the president of the Oriental Land Company to discuss the suitability of constructing a Disney theme park in Japan.
I have no idea. So, just for fun, I'll take one away.
Okay, take one away. I will take away the filming of Walt Disney's The Love Bug.
Okay, then. I'm going to go with, A, the interior of Haunted Mansion.
Okay, final answer?
Yeah.
Okay, that is incorrect. So, although the timing would have been right. So, Ryan, over to you. I'm going to give this a try. You have a 50-50 chance here. Is it site preparation for the Walt Disney World project in Florida, or is it the very first meeting to discuss the suitability of a Disney theme park in Japan?
I'm not thinking it's Japan, because Japan is much younger than that. But so I'm going to go with site preparations for Walt Disney World.
Okay, and that is correct. Very good. Site preparation begins in Florida for the Walt Disney World project, requiring swamp drainage, clearing of land, and removal of trees. It will take 1,584 days and $400 million till opening day. Well, you know what? That means you're tied now. 3-3. Okay, and Ryan, you can now pull ahead. So, since it's your turn now. Hey, on May 31st, 2008, so something within your time span here, this Disney character blasts off to the International Space Station as a member of the crew of Space Shuttle Discovery. Who is this Disney character?
2008. I don't. I'm think. I have an idea, but I'm not 100% sure. So I'm going to go with the multiple choice.
Is it A, WALL-E, the star of Disney Pixar's newest animated feature scheduled to open on June 27th? B, Buzz Lightyear, C, Stitch, or D, Bolt, the star of Disney's newest animated feature scheduled to open on November 21st?
I was thinking WALL-E, so I'm just going to stick with my gut and go with A, WALL-E.
Okay. You know, and I normally say stick with your gut. In this case, not so much. Although that was good logic there. No, WALL-E did not go up in the space shuttle Discovery. So, Craig, over to you. So is it Buzz Lightyear, Stitch, or Bolt?
Well, I know we've had space questions on here before, and I always go with whatever revolves around Buzz Lightyear, and I'm always wrong. So I'm going to stay away from that. Bolt would make sense, but I feel like that's a trick too. So I'm going with Stitch.
Okay. Final answer?
Yeah.
But you know what? This was your Buzz Lightyear question, Craig.
Are you serious?
Yep. Buzz Lightyear blasts off to the International Space Station as a member of the crew of Space Shuttle Discovery. The toy Space Ranger is part of a program that the Disney's youth educational series and NASA have developed. Buzz's mission coincides with the opening of Toy Story Midway Mania, a new 4D interactive attraction opening on this day at Walt Disney World's Disney's Hollywood Studios. The following month, the second version will open at Disney California Adventure. Buzz will remain on the space station until September 2009.
Yeah, I'm just never going to get it.
So it's that Pixar curse sometimes. Okay, but you still have a chance to break the tie because it's your question here. Hey, the California State Senate and Assembly proclaims June 1st, 2015 as Disneyland Day. Who arrives in the state capital of Sacramento to accept the honor?
And I have a feeling if I ask multiple choice, it's probably going to be something like Mickey Mouse, Bob Iger, and, you know, stuff like that. So I'm just going to say Mickey Mouse, and I'm going to go for the blind guess and be wrong.
Well, I would normally say yes, except he was accompanied by someone. So I'm going to have to toss it over to Ryan because it's not a complete answer. So Ryan, now that it's over to you, I can give you all the choices. Is it A, Mickey Mouse and the Happiest Balloon on Earth, which is a Mickey Mouse shaped hot air balloon? B, Mickey, Minnie, Donald, and Goofy in the Mouse Rail, a Mark III monorail that was converted into a Lim Mouse scene? C, Bob Iger and Mickey Mouse, or D, Bob Iger and Diane Disney Miller?
Well, we know one.
Can
it's
you
not.
Repeat D?
I was just going to say, you have a hint here.
Can you repeat D, please? You kind of cut out on that.
Oh, sorry. D was Bob Iger and Diane Disney Miller. But we already know Mickey Mouse is part of the answer.
Yep. I'm gonna go with I'll go with D, I guess.
Bob Iger and Diane Disney Miller?
Yep.
Okay, that is your final answer?
I'm going to go B instead. I don't think Diane was alive at that time anymore.
Okay, so Mickey, Minnie, Donald, and Goofy in the Mouse Rail, a Mark III monorail converted into a Lim Mouse scene, correct?
Yeah.
That's your guess? Actually, it was Mickey Mouse, but he arrived in the happiest balloon on Earth, a Mickey Mouse-shaped hot air balloon. So no one gets any points for that one. So probably because, you know, our governor didn't want him polluting the air with small, you know, carbon combustion engine. All right. Okay, last question goes to you, Ryan, so you can break the tie with this. Okay. Emmy Award-winning actor, singer, comedian, and television personality Wayne Brady is born in Columbus, Georgia on June 2, 1972. Raised in Orlando, Florida at age 15, Brady worked at Walt Disney World. What was Wayne Brady's role at Walt Disney World? I had to look it up. We discussed this on a past show recently.
I know. I'm irritated because I didn't bother looking it up now, so it's still a mystery to me.
Oh, I know I remember hearing about this on a recent Connecting with Walt podcast, but I don't remember. I think you only talked about his role at Universal, so I'm going to go with multiple choice.
Okay, was it A, food and beverage quick service at the Magic Kingdom, B, custodial at Epcot Center, C, dishwasher steward at the Magic Kingdom, or D, character performer at the Magic Kingdom?
Nothing's really standing out to me. I know, you know, being in entertainment now, I would think character performer. So that's what I'm going to go with. I'm going to go with D, character performer.
Hey, final answer.
Yep.
You are correct. Wayne Brady worked at Walt Disney World as a character performer. His roles included portraying Goofy and Tigger. About being a friend of Tigger, Brady once said, inside that costume, it was about 90,000 degrees. A then 16-year-old Brady was portraying Tigger in a parade at the Magic Kingdom when he passed out from the heat. I should have paced myself, but I fell flat on my face. They carried me off with my recorded voice still going, woo-hoo-hoo! So, very good. Ryan, you pulled ahead and you won this round. 5-3. You redeemed yourself here.
Congratulations.
Yeah, congratulations. All right.
I really did. Thank you.
You're welcome. Good job, that Wayne Brady one. That when I saw that, I thought, okay, I've got to find this out. When I saw it was his birthday. So, anyway. All right, and I think the Universal one was a good hint, since he was a character performer at Universal. So, anyway. So, see, pays to listen to the show. All right, well, you know, now that Craig has won one episode and you have won one round, I think we have to have you come back so that we can break this tie. So will you join us again next week for another quiz? Excellent.
Definitely.
Okay. Well, we will look forward to having you back next week on Connecting with Walt.
Well, you know, I did use a few references whilst constructing the Disneyland of my dreams, and it includes the Disneyland Encyclopedia by Chris Strotter, and I looked at a couple of websites as well for some historical content, and that was Yesterland and the Disney Wiki.
Those were mine too.
Excellent. Great. Yeah, all good references. Good resources.
Yes.
So, Craig, until next time, where can our listeners connect with you on the Diz Unplugged?
Of course, you can find me on Tuesdays on the Walt Disney World Edition podcast, Thursdays on the Universal Edition podcast, random days throughout the week on the Diz Daily Fix, Wednesdays on the Best and Worst of Walt Disney World, here, there, and everywhere, and of course, always on Twitter and Instagram at Teleclaster. But, Michael, where can we find you?
Well, you can send me messages at michael@wdwinfo.com. On Twitter, I'm at mbowling121. Facebook, I'm Michael Bowling. That's with the Connecting with Walt banner. Instagram, I'm Michael Bowling that is. And of course, you can always connect with me and Craig on Connecting with Walt at our Twitter page, at Connecting Walt. Tell us, what are some of the attractions in the Disneyland of your dreams? What would you add? What would you subtract? What would you, do you agree with ours? Our selections, but how would you build upon the Disneyland of our dreams to make it the Disneyland of your dreams? And also a couple of other sort of program notes. You're probably noticing, it sounds like I'm on a spaceship or something with the This Week in Disney History quizzes. Unfortunately, I did have an audio issue at my end. Behind the scenes here. We're taking you backstage of the show. We tend to record all of the episodes of the quiz with one of our guests all in one evening. So unfortunately, when I experience an audio issue, it will span several weeks.
Yeah.
So that's what you ran into.
And your producer failed you in this instant and did not hear the audio issue during the recording. Otherwise, it would have been solved beforehand.
Well, of course, if I had pressed a certain button on my end, it would not have happened at all. So you know, it all starts in the Western Kingdom this time around.
The good part is it's still entertaining. It isn't up to the quality of everything else that we put out.
No, and it did not change the outcome of the quiz in any way.
Exactly.
Also, an update on Carol. We've been receiving so many kind messages and support and pixie dust and prayers. She is home from the hospital, finally. But she has a real long road to recovery. I think she thought she was somehow just going to bounce out of ICU and just hit the ground running and start her life, you know, from where it left off. Well, you know, she definitely got out of bed and she definitely hit the ground. It was not running by any means. And she is on pretty much bed rest and, you know, just really a lot of restrictions for the next few weeks as she gathers her energy up. And so definitely please keep those positive thoughts, prayers, and pixie dust coming, because she still does need them for the next couple of months until she fully recovers from the after effects of the surgery. So thank you again. We truly and sincerely appreciate it. So, and thank you for making us a part of your day. And remember, we only hope that we never lose sight of one thing, that it was all started by a man, Walt Disney, and his brother.